Joey claims, and it's my pleasure to welcome you to another Gangus and Ragman show interview, where the boys chew the fat with both veterans and newcomers in the industry. So without further ado, I'm gonna pour me a pint and kick back as I turn things over to tonight's guest. Take it away.
Hi, this is Zach Zedris from Serpentine Sky, and you're listening to the Gangus and Ragman show. Horns up.
You're on live, mano e mano, with Ragman and Zach Zedris from Serpentine Sky. How you doing, Zach?
How you doing? I'm great, thanks. For a Sunday afternoon here.
Oh, man. Well, it's Sunday afternoon, so you're allowed to have a beer right now.
It is beer o'clock.
And me too. You know, it's funny. When we were setting this up, I know Australia, I always thought it was like 12 hours, but you guys are actually 15 hours ahead of us.
Oh, okay.
So it's like 10 o'clock at night in Texas. Cool. So, and you guys are in like the middle of summer right now, right?
Yeah, the last couple of years we've had, you know, a few heat waves. So it gets very hot here.
Well, we know all about hot in Texas, believe me.
Yeah.
Hey, man, let's talk about your band here. You have a very interesting story, and for people that aren't familiar with Serpentine Sky, it's kind of 25 years in the making for your debut. Can you kind of give us a little backstory of why it took you guys so long to get your debut out, as well as, you know, kind of what you guys sound like?
Okay, well, we were around in the late 80s, early 90s, and over a period of about 2 years became just very, very popular in our hometown, recorded by all the labels, and then our drummer unfortunately had a serious motorcycle accident, put us out of commission for a while. We did get another drummer, but sort of the magic was lost, so we all went our separate ways. And then about 3 years ago, a friend of ours passed away, and his partner asked us to reform to play at his tribute show, which we did, and the reaction was insane. So we decided to record the songs finish some business that we started and record some of these songs and give them a sort of a modern sound that they deserved. Not that we changed it to sound modern, we just updated the production, basically. As far as who we sound like, I'm almost the wrong person to ask because, look, we obviously sound like we're from that era of the 80s. I can't say who we sound like. We have influences like, you know, Whitesnake, Def Leppard, Van Halen, bands like that. Yeah, but I don't know. It's hard to say.
Well, you know what? We're probably about the same age. I kind of grew up in the explosion of the 80s metal and so forth. So I'm an old school guy. I kind of hear, like, I was listening to some songs today, and, you know, I'm hearing, like, Hurricane and, like, a little bit of Black and Blue, maybe a little bit of that Whitesnake edge, too. But the songs are very punchy, very catchy, and it's, you know, it's good melodic metal with, you know, a really nice little kind of crunchy edge, man. You really have a nice sound on your guitar there. And
thank you.
Just very crunchy, and that's what I like, because, you know, there's a lot of bands that even from that era that would have, you know, more melodic tunes, and it just got too syrupy. But you guys have that edge, and that's what I really dig about your band.
Thank you. Yeah, I think the thing that ruined a lot of those 80s bands was, I think it was the time. It was, you know, there was so much reverb, and they put so much effects on everything back in the day, whereas we pretty much kept it sort of not live, but there's not a lot of effects on the band itself, so it's sort of dry, and it doesn't sound that dated, you know.
Yeah, it's very fresh. And you know what? Another thing that's really cool about you guys is you were actually doing it in the late 80s. And it's not like you're a bunch of young guys trying to, you know, make that sound of old. I mean, that's another thing you got going for you. It's like, hey, we're legitimate guys. We were doing this in the 80s. It just took us a while to get this first record out.
Yeah, there's a lot of sort of younger bands that are almost like photocopies of that era now, like, you know, this resurgence a bit. And yeah, I guess we could say we're the real deal.
Yeah, for sure. And it was cool that on the debut you put in your Sex and Money, the 1991 demo. Let me ask you this. I know you said you were searching for labels. Were you guys actually signed, and then when your drummer had the issues, you just, the deal fell through, or?
At the time, we were having about five labels coming to our shows, and we were in negotiations, so we weren't actually signed, no.
Oh, okay. Well, back then, I mean, what was the metal scene like? I mean, for a band like you guys, was it, I mean, they were signing about every band that kind of sounded like that, you know, for a while in the late 80s, early 90s. But on Sunset Strip and Hollywood and stuff like that. But as far as Australia goes, what was the scene like then, and how would you compare it to what it looks like now?
It was a really good scene. There was, I guess you could call it a mini LA, you know. But we were pretty much the wrong band in the wrong country, because the sort of music that was big here, it was never really big in Australia. But, I mean, we were packing out venues, but I think our long-term plan was to get out of the country, but that never really eventuated.
Yeah, it's got to be tough. I know a lot of bands, unless they just get some sort of break to where they can, you know, get out of the country, and, I mean, for you guys, you got a long way to go to get anywhere, unfortunately, where you're located, unless you can go over to Japan and kind of make a name for yourself over there. But, I mean, getting over to Europe or even to the States, I mean, that's a little bit of a jaunt. So I guess you would have to have some sort of financial backing to be able to do something like that. And back then, I'm sure it was difficult, but now it's probably even harder.
It's twofold, you know. In a way, it's easy because obviously we have the internet now, so you're kind of instant, you know, you can be anywhere just on YouTube or whatever. But look, Europe, there's a great scene for this style of music. I'm not just kind of sure what it's like in the States at the moment. But yeah, it's a bit more difficult. Like there isn't a lot of people coming out to see live bands as there was 20 years ago, because they've got so much more options. You know, they can stay at home and sit on their computer or their PlayStation, or then go see a live band.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think it's you know, I will say this, and I agree with you 100%, and I've seen some stories and had some conversations with some guys that, you know, the youth of today is so much different than when we were growing up. I mean, you didn't have all these electronics, and that they're just focused on their phones or their iPads or what have you. It's not like, hey, man, let's go see a concert tonight. And, you know, sometimes you don't even care who was playing. You just want to see some people play live. And
That's right. I mean, the worst thing to see as a performer is looking out on stage and you see somebody on their phone or something like that. It just infuriates me. They should be banned from live gigs, I think.
It's so annoying when you got the guy in front of you trying to film the show on his phone. It's like, dude, I can't see the band because there's damn phones in the air, you know?
And they're not enjoying the experience, are they? I mean, they're going to go home and watch it on their phone. It's going to sound awful.
Right.
And, it's pretty sad.
I agree. Well, let's jump into your record, and my hat's off to you. It's a very, very solid record, and I'm so thankful that you reached out to me, Zach, or, you know, I might have actually skipped over it, but when you reached out to me, I was like, let me check these guys out, and man, I tell you what, I fell in love with the band instantly, and the song that I really caught my ear first was You're the One. What a killer tune. Can you tell me, you know, how's the writing process come with within the band? And is this an older song, or is this something you guys came up with when you got back together?
Most of them, all of them are older songs. We've altered little bits in them, but we basically decided to, I think, the mindset I thought of anyway, just personally, was, you know that last Van Halen album with David Lee Roth that they put out?
Oh, yeah.
Which I thought, out of all the older bands, that was one of my favourite album, and you know, you got a lot of other bands like Whitesnake and Iron Maiden. What I liked about what Van Halen did, what I'm trying to explain is they used old songs and re-recorded them. And I always think that a lot of bands are at their best when they're sort of in their early 20s and they don't think about it too much and they just let everything flow. And I thought, why don't we just let, instead of going in there and doing some new stuff, let's just not overthink it, do it as we, do the songs pretty much as we used to play them live, and just update the production. So, also, the writing, we used to basically, I mean, the majority of the songs were written by the singer and I, Patrick, and then, look, some of them, he would just come up with, he'd come up to me with an acoustic and play something, and then I'd just sort of rock it up a bit. It was pretty old school, you know. We used to sit around with, yeah, acoustics and sing, and then get it to the band. And yeah, it's not rocket science. I think if you overthink it, that's when it gets a bit difficult.
Yeah.
So just letting it flow.
I agree.
I answered that better.
Yeah, well, they say some of the best songs were written in like 15 minutes. You know.
That's right. I mean, I think lots of classic examples of this. I remember reading about how I think Janie Lane wrote Cherry Pie. You know, they'd finished the album and the record company said, look, we need a single. And I think he just wrote Cherry Pie in like 5 minutes, didn't think much of it, and the whole album became Cherry Pie.
Yeah, I know. It became probably their biggest single. And they had, I mean, actually the record, there were so many better songs than Cherry Pie, like Uncle Tom's Cabin. I love that, the little intro and stuff like that. But that's funny. Yeah, some of these, I don't know. If you overthink it, I guess it kind of takes away from the finished product for sure.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, as you get older, you start doing that. And so that was the main mantra to go into the studio was, let's just do everything really quickly and not overthink it. I think if you spend too long on something, again, you're starting to polish a turd, as they say.
I hear you, man. Well, another part of that song I want to mention, at the very end, I guess probably maybe the last minute of the song, you guys kick into a groove. And, dude, every time I hear that, I have to crank it up and just virtually start headbanging in my car. It's so cool, man.
That was always a live favorite of ours, and we had a lot of songs to choose from, and that might have even been the first one we recorded.
Oh wow, cool. Well, another one I wanted to mention was "For Love the Way." That one, the chorus is just gets in your head. That's the one that kind of reminded me of like Hurricane meets Black and Blue. Just very melodic and just very infectious. I really dig that track.
Yeah, that's probably the band's favourite song, because that was one of the last songs we ever wrote before we broke up, and it's sort of got everything in it. It's heavy, but it's melodic, and it's got all the best bits of the band in it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's probably our favorite.
Well, when you guys got back together, I mean, and you decided, okay, let's give this thing a go. How tough was it? Was it kind of like getting back on the bike, or did it take a while for you guys to get the chemistry back, or was it fairly instantaneous?
Oh, it was instantaneous. The moment we pretty much rehearsed for this show, it just sounded great. And then when we did that show, it was pretty much straight afterwards. We said we've got to record these songs because we played at a very famous venue here in Melbourne called the Esplanade Hotel, and it was full, and the crowd was just so into it. I mean, there were people crying while we were playing. There were people singing songs that we hadn't. We only had a single out back in the day, but people were singing along to songs that we'd never even released. So
wow.
I was going, what? So, I mean, we did have an impact on people, and that's why we just thought we have to record these songs. Just for us, personally, for selfish reasons first, really.
Well, that's awesome, because it sounds like, I mean, you guys never released, like you said, the debut record, but you had such a big following after 25 years. You're able to pack a house. That's amazing, man. That had to be pretty much, you're probably hitting each other on the shoulder. He's like, shit, we did a good thing here. Why didn't we do it sooner?
Yeah. I know. Now, you know, in hindsight, I wish we did, but, you know.
Well, if you don't mind me asking, what were you up to for the last 25 years? Were you continuing to write? Were you playing with other bands? Or were you doing kind of like you had your day job thing?
A bit of all of the above, really. We all continued playing music. I was in a band. Over the years, I was probably in about four or five different bands that recorded. We actually, three of us straight after, our band originally was called Serpentine, not Serpentine Sky. And then straight after Serpentine, three of us formed another band. And we did that for a couple of years. And then pretty much we'd had enough of each other and had a long time break. We sort of all still remain friends, but we're all busy, but you know, some of us had children, and you know, life went on.
That's interesting. Well, back to the record. I wanted to bring up Nobody's Girl because I wanted to give you some compliments on the solo. That was a really nice solo, on that track. And was kind of curious who some of your influences guitar wise are.
That's not me doing
this. Oh, sorry.
No, but it's actually one of my favorites. So it's the other guy, Rex, but that is a fantastic solo. We both very much have the same influences, you know, Eddie Van Halen, John Sykes from, you know, John Sykes?
Oh, I love John Sykes, man. I want Blue Murder back.
Look, he's hopefully putting out an album this year, which he's been teasing with for the last 10 years. I think he put some samples up about 2 years ago, and I just hope he puts it out. A huge influence.
Did you hear the samples that he had up?
Yeah.
What did you think of
them? Yeah. I thought they were pretty cool, except for that Bob Marley cover that was on there. I don't know why he did that.
Well, he did cover Ichiku Park on the second Blue Murder, where I still scratch my head on that one.
I know.
But I love Sykes, man, and was kind of bummed when he left the reincarnated Thin Lizzy. I mean, the new Thin Lizzy, I guess, with trying to think of Warwick.
Ricky Warwick, yeah.
Yeah, with him on vocals, I mean, he sounds like Phil, which is cool. But I kind of liked what Sykes was doing with some of the songs. I thought it was pretty cool. And his tone is just, no one can match that guy's tone, for sure.
He's definitely a favorite. I loved him in Thin Lizzy, actually. Have you heard that live album they did about maybe 10 years ago?
Called One Night Only? I have that. That thing's awesome.
I play that all the time, actually.
I have put it in a while, but, man, I'll crank that every once in a while. And, unfortunately, I never got to see him with Thin Lizzy. I saw Blue Murder on their opening tour. They played a club here in Houston. And, oh, man, it was amazing. But that's the only time I've ever seen Sykes perform.
Wow. I Thin Lizzy is a massive, massive influence on me. But, look, let me just finish my guitar influences. You got guys like Warren Demartini, George Lynch, Jake E. Lee, a guy from a band called TNT called Ronnie LaTecro.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, obviously that era of guitar players is, all right, we're all sort of, they fed us, really. Mm-hmm.
That's killer, man. I love every one of those guys. Every one of them's, I'm a huge fan of each one of those guys you mentioned, for sure. I wanted to go back to the record again and bring up another song, which has kind of an interesting title, and it's one of the longer tracks on the record, and it's kind of not really a ballad, but kind of in that vein, Flower Dolls. How does that song come together, and kind of, you know, where did that title come from? That was an interesting title.
Thank you.
That was a song almost that the music, we pretty much wrote that song in one. So it's one of those things that just flows out. Like if I even tried to remember how we did it, but it's, you know, that's our big epic number. I'm not sure where Patrick got the title from. We almost actually nearly call the album Flower Dolls. I guess it's kind of the central song of the whole album. It's our sort of it's almost like a Beatles-y meets. I remember at the time I was very influenced by the song No More Tears by Ozzy. Mm-hmm. And I think I remember hearing it going, "Oh, we need to write an epic too." And I think that just flowed out.
That's cool.
But it's a great song. At the very intro on it, I put in there's actually a few more demos from the 80s on that. That's, you know, that whole radio intro that I put on it. Mm-hmm. So it's like a little journey. But it's a fun song to play.
Oh, it's killer, man. I really dig that. Let me ask you this. As far as production, did you guys produce the record?
Yeah, we did it with a guy called Ricky Ray. He kind of recorded and mixed it, but myself and the other guitarist produced it.
It's got a really nice, clean, like I said, punchy, crunchy production, which, like I said, really drew me to the band and this record. I'm really impressed with the record. Congratulations, man. It's really a strong record.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I think Ricky did a great job just capturing each of us. He's got a fantastic studio sort of out in the country a bit, and we had a great time doing it.
Well, as far as touring goes, what are you guys' plans right now? I mean, like you said, coming back 25 years later, some guys probably, you know, maybe have the day job. You know, what are your thoughts on... Are you guys going full throttle and going to try to do some major touring, or what are your plans?
We're trying to. It's very difficult in one sense. Our singer Patrick lives in Queensland, which is another state of Australia, and our bass player is in the film industry. So trying to get us all together is difficult. But also. In Australia, you can't really play that often because there's not a huge market for this style of music in this mm-hmm. country. So we try and pick and choose the best times to play. We're hoping to get over to Europe this year. Patrick is actually in Los Angeles right now. We'd love to get over to the States as well. There's also a melodic rock festival happening in Australia in May, which will be awesome because it's headlined by have you heard of Eclipse?
Yeah. Eric Martinson, right?
Yes, so there's Eclipse, there's Eric Gronwell from Heat, Paul Lane, Mitch Malloy, and then a bunch of Australian bands, BB Steel, who are a band I think around in the 90s, they've got back together, White Widow, The Radio Sun. It's going to be great. It's put on by Andrew from Melodic Rock, and it's 2 days of melodic rock, which is great because this music doesn't get covered in Australia, and he's sort of really the flag waver for it, and he's done an incredible job, and it's going to be awesome.
Oh, you know, what Andrew's done for melodic metal is just, I mean, the guy is awesome for what he's done, and his site's awesome. And actually, that festival had been, I think, around Chicago. I heard about this one this year being in Australia. Is this taking place, or is he going to try to do two this year?
No, it's 2 days, Friday, May 13th and 14th in Melbourne. And, it's going to be huge.
That is awesome, man.
The first day will be some of these acts unplugged, and There's VIP passes and things like that. And the second day will be the full bands.
Oh, that sounds killer, man. I wish I was going to be in Australia. I'd definitely be there, man. It's a very, very cool bill for sure.
Yeah.
Well, so what, have you talked about the next record, or do you already have, you said you already had a bunch of songs left over from back in the day. Are your thoughts to continue and do another record, or maybe look at writing some new material, or what's the next step?
I think the next album we're going to do probably half-half. That's what we've spoken about, like, we'll do the best of some old songs, and I think everybody that's heard it, I've also gone, you know, like, let's hear what you guys would sound like now. So, not that we're going to start sounding like One Direction or anything, but I think it'll sound, look, I've always pretty much written the same way, so it's probably going to sound just the same. Hopefully a lot better.
Nice, man. Nice. Well, Zach, before we let you go today, is there anything you'd like to tell the fans out there?
No, I'd just like to say thanks for supporting us. And it really means a lot because, you know, this music needs, we need the support. It's almost a niche market, isn't it?
Yeah.
But thank you. And thank you to you, Alan.
Oh, no problem, man. We love the music here at therighttorock.com, and we support it every time we get a chance. And discover a old new band like yourself is always welcomed on our part. We always dig that. And then, you know, if there's a band we really dig, we go out and definitely spread the word because we love great music.
Yeah, thank you. It really means a lot. You know, we put... You know, we really put our heart into everything, and just to hear from on our Facebook page, just to hear from people over the world that have heard it, that dig it, and from you, it means a lot to us. So thank you.
You're welcome, man. You're welcome anytime. Well, Zach, we want to thank you for coming on the Genghis and Ragman show here on therighttorock.com, and we want to tell the fans to go out and get Serpentine Skies debut record. Zach, where's the best way to get your record?
At the moment, it's on iTunes worldwide. If you're old school and you want an actual CD, it's from melodicrock.com.
Perfect. Well, Zach, thanks a lot, man. Good luck with the show here in a couple months, and I wish the best of luck to you guys, and we hope to talk to you again soon.
Thank you very much, Alan. Great to talk to you.
We hope you check out our website at therighttorock.com, where you can find music and video reviews, along with occasional bits of other metal and beer-related info. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Our show's posted on a regular schedule, but we average a couple a month, so feel free to leave a review and tell your friends so we can spread the word. But above all, please check out the artists we play on the show, and support good music wherever you find it by buying from your favorite merchants. And that definitely includes the amazing Tracy G. We love you, brother, who writes all of our original theme music. You can find him online at TracyG.com, so check him out. Well, that's it, and there it is. I'm your announcer, Joey Clams, reminding you to drink good beer, support good music, and keep those horns up.